Hello, I'm Chris Gladwin, the CEO of Osient, and welcome to another edition of our podcast that is all about data called Big Bites with Osient. And we're interested in the technology of the work being done, and we really want to focus on the people who are transforming the world with data. And so today I'm excited to welcome Lee Davidson. Lee is the Chief Data and Analytics Officer at Morningstar. We're excited to learn from Lee's expertise and explore how big data is transforming the financial research industries. Let's get rolling. Welcome, Lee. Great to see you.
Great to be here. Thank you so much, Chris. Good to be here.
Awesome. Well, I think it'd be good to maybe start with a little bit about, you know, what is Morningstar doing with data? I would say generally, you know, we kind of had the Industrial Revolution, which was, you know, about mechanical things. And then we had the Computing Revolution. I feel like we're in the Data Revolution as a planet. And, you know, Morningstar has been right in the middle of that for decades as a data company. So tell us a little bit about Morningstar and what you all do with data.
Yeah, absolutely. So good to be here. So thanks for giving us the opportunity to talk a little bit about Morningstar. So Morningstar has been around, we celebrated 40 years this year as a company. And the founding mission for the company has really stayed the same, which is to illuminate investing for all investors and make it easier. We started with mutual funds in the United States. We've expanded that to really almost every type of investment vehicle that's available for sale to investors globally, be it ETFs, private markets, or like CITs and those sorts of things. And so when we think about what it means to illuminate investing, it really starts with just providing a common language, a lingua franca, for investors of all types to understand their opportunity set. And we take that mission really seriously.
Yeah, for me, you know, it has a special meaning. I back in the 80s, a long time ago, when I was a college student, I bought, and also right after college, I bought those Morningstar books that
binders.
Ranked all the financial investments you could make, and they, you know, had all the data, you know, in a common language about, like, you know, what's the expense load or what's the, you know, the kind of historical performance of those funds. And that was, you know, that really helped me out. I think that was, you know, transformational as kind of like a budding young investor. One topic that's kind of we see relevant today, though, is kind of growing data complexity. I mean, wouldn't be that long ago that you could fit all this information about financial information into a book or two. I don't know if it fit in. Maybe need like a couple van loads of books these days. What's going on in the world of data, financial data, with regard to the scale? Like, how big is the data that people are using? You know, how much are they analyzing to make financial decisions?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of ways I think about this, and it really starts with, so just for context, Morningstar really sits at the nexus of asset management and wealth management. So the people that are creating managed investment products that are made available for sale to financial advisors or wealth managers to select from and then help their clients meet their financial goals, right? So we kind of sit at the nexus of that supply and that demand for investments. And so we provide data and research to make that easier on both sides, what products to create, but also what products to purchase. And so, you know, for us, the complexity really comes from the fact that the ecosystem has gotten more complex over time. So a couple of things, just those big trends that are good to level set on. Number one, you know, mutual funds in the first 20 years of Morningstar's history, kind of going into the mid 2000s, really started to grow significantly and be the primary managed investment vehicle that people around the world got access to diversified investment strategies. I think something on the order of like 95, 96% of all assets under management in the mid 2000s were in the mutual fund structure.
Wow.
The last 20 years, though, what we have observed is a lot of innovation in the financial markets from both a investment strategy point of view and a vehicle point of view that's introduced more complexity. So those are the rise of ETFs, separately managed accounts, direct indexing strategies, those types of things. And on the whole, the number of choices available to investors has grown about 10% per year for the last 20 years. So there's more choice, there's more heterogeneity, and per unit, there's just more information about all of these investments. And so you kind of sum all that together, it makes our job really exciting, trying to make sense of the increasing complexity of the marketplace, but certainly a lot more challenging too, because the data volumes are increasing, the number of options are increasing.
So yeah, how does that exciting complexity, you know, affect the work you do at Morningstar? What does that mean? Does that mean you've got, I don't know, lots of servers and you know, you've got all these data flows coming in that you have to manage? I mean, what does it really mean in terms of the actual day-to-day work that you have to do in the data analytics functions at Morningstar to provide this capability to your customers?
Yeah, so I'll say a couple of things. Number one, and you kind of asked about data volumes. When we look at kind of the stock and flow, so to speak, of the data volumes that are coming in, we can look at it from like operational data sets. So those are things like, you know, who manages this fund? What's this fund's name? What's their prospectus? Those sorts of things. We're seeing that data volume double about every 2.5 to 3 years. There's also price data. Mm-hmm. And that's coming in. That's doubling probably about once every 5 years, especially as investments move to more highly traded structures like ETFs. And then there's portfolio data. And if you see, so this would be like, what are these mutual funds? What are these ETFs? What are these separately managed accounts? What do they hold? What are their actual investments? What's their strategy, and so forth? And with regulation around the world pushing for more transparency, we're seeing those volumes double about every 2 years. Wow. So in general, those kind of three different buckets of information, the volumes of them are doubling. How we're managing it, it's I think it's evolved quite a bit. And so like a lot of companies, in order to handle the increased scale of the data volumes, we've moved more towards cloud infrastructure for the auto-scaling kind of benefits of that. From an analytics point of view, we've really had to adapt a lot of our methodologies to be more machine learning heavy, less qualitative, and also start to be able to recognize the nuances between these different types of options. And that has had to change a lot of our methodologies. I talked about the lingua franca, you know, a few minutes ago, like being able to put on the same like intellectual playing field, a structure like a thematic investing approach for ETFs with a traditional index kind of large cap equity fund and say a private markets exposure fund through like an interval structure, trying to make all those comparable is increasingly difficult, but something that I think we're doing a pretty good job of.
Yeah, we see that same complexity and growth theme in the Beyond Big Data report. Ocient does an annual report where we ask hundreds of data leaders, you know, kind of across the industry, you know, what is going on for them. And, you know, you ask a lot of questions about this and that. But one of the interesting ones is we asked about what they're seeing in terms of growth of data and the growth of complexity data. And 100% of respondents said, yeah, that's an issue that they're dealing with. As I kind of listen to you, one of the things I'm interested is how is that ability of Morningstar to kind of handle all that data growth and all that complexity and turn that into some kind of actionable insight to your customers? Like, how's that changing? And do you have an example of something that, where someone has been able to use that capability that you provide to get some kind of economic insights?
Yeah, maybe let me, you mentioned the binder and you said in the 80s that you, that this was something that was helpful for you and you're getting started. Maybe I can talk this kind of in, I'll put it this way. There's maybe been three different phases that we've gone through as a business of the last 40 years of how we provide the cumulative or summary insight of what good looks like for investors and try to make this as simple as possible. So we started with just what we're kind of well known for is the Morningstar star rating, which was just a, you know, you bucket these investments together and you look at their relative risk-adjusted return by within their peer group. And so the big work there was, you know, stitching together return time series and just, you know, doing a relative rank comparison on them. And that was something that we came out with, I believe it was like 1992 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that really carried us for a while. But that was missing a lot of nuances with the manager's approach, their approach to controlling risk, all these sorts of things. And so in 2011, we took the step of having our manager research team provide qualitative assessments of the goodness or the relative fit of these investments. And we put that on a different scale. We called that gold, silver, bronze, neutral, negative. We called it our analyst mm-hmm. rating. Mm-hmm. And this had like immediate adoption from both the wealth management industry for trying to find good products and the asset management industry for saying, well, yeah, even though my performance may not have been very good recently, we've got a really compelling narrative, really compelling strategy. We want to be able to tell our prospective buyers about it. And so that was really useful. The problem with it was, is that the scale of it was pretty small. We, you know, I think there's something on the order of 1 million investments available for sale now globally. And this particular approach qualitatively with, even though we have the largest manager research firm in the world of over 130 analysts, we can only do about one of these ratings per week per analyst. And so we got to about, you know, 40,000 or something of that order of ratings. And mm-hmm. that's just not close to where we need to be in terms of 1 million. So the last kind of phase that we went through, we rolled out in 2023, was a machine learning enabled kind of merging together the insights from our analysts. We took their, all of their choices historically, the data about these products, and created a supervised learning approach to scale up what they do. We scaled up their output by about 15x. And so we're covering investments now, about 500,000 investments globally with a combination of quantitative and qualitative insights. And the efficacy of that combined system has been phenomenal. So it's really been, I think, you know, we've been trying to be thoughtful about how we deploy machine learning. You know, we don't just jump out and do it. Like, I think our prototype was built in 2013, but it took another almost 10 years before we rolled this out for everybody globally. So we took a thoughtful approach to it, but yeah, I mean, I think firms like Morningstar, firms like OCM, we need to be mindful of how to scale up to the increasing data demands of this century.
That's really interesting to hear. You know, you hear a lot about what's going on with AI. Obviously, it's a giant topic in popular media. And, you know, I think it is really cool to, I don't know, create a slide with a background in the style of Salvador Dali. But that's not really, you know, insightful financial analysis. But to hear that you are able to use predictive AI, machine learning, to kind of 15x, you know, the amount of analyst output you're getting by combining the analyst with the machine learning, that's really fascinating. Are you also seeing examples where you're able to provide predictive analytics, predictive AI, in a way that helps investors make investment decisions?
Yeah, so I think that's definitely one of the biggest, probably canonical examples for us, because that's the most visible rating system, this Medalist rating system. We put it on everything and every product. I'd say one of the ways we're starting to, and I'll touch on generative AI here. One of the ways, we see a lot of examples of generative AI applications that are more of the chatbot orientation. We certainly have those. We've got a product, Morningstar Mo, that helps financial advisors sift through all of this different research mm-hmm. And data to help them conduct their due diligence. But one of the areas I think that maybe is a little less talked about that I'm really nerding out on right now, which is how we're using generative AI for the processing of unstructured data. Mm-hmm. So I'm firmly of the belief that unstructured data in general is going to be growing at probably the fastest rate, simply because now we have tools to generate this type of content. But one of the cool things we're doing with it is to actually read, comprehend, extract, and summarize unstructured data content using generative AI. So a couple of examples here, just to throw it out. We can dig on this more if you're interested. But you know, the number of PDF documents we consume today has gone up, I think, probably doubled in the last 2 years. PDFs or emails or things like that, people sending us content. Just over the last quarter, we've received over 100 million PDF documents that we need to process.
Wow.
Our current automation rate on that is like maybe single digits, being able to do that without people involved. And so we're looking right now to actively deploy generative AI off-the-shelf LLMs on reading those documents, doing a first pass, and presenting the summary insights to our teams of analysts, and these analysts number in the thousands, to get a first pass and try to say, okay, well, what is this document really trying to tell me? What's important? What do I need to do to collect this and standardize it and plop this into our databases? So I think this is going to be transformational for firms like Morningstar, where we can look at more human in the loop, Gen AI enabled workflow tools and move away from data entry and more into data insight at the point of collection. So I think that's really exciting frontier for us, and I'm pretty excited about it.
That's really impressive, because you hear so much about what people are doing with AI, and it's just not kind of business impacting, you know, and that clearly is. How do you deal with, you know, one of the issues with AI is it isn't always right. And so how do you deal with that from kind of a quality point of view to ensure that, are hallucinations an issue, you know, AI hallucinations an issue for you, or, you know, how do you deal with, you know, inaccuracies, both in the data itself as well as the AI enabled analysis of that data?
Okay, so maybe two different examples here I'll give you. For our client facing applications, we've got a really high tolerance, or I shouldn't say tolerance, a really high threshold, low tolerance for hallucinations. And so we were actually pretty quick to market with the chatbot type of solution that would give financial advisors access to our data and content through kind of a RAG setup. Mm-hmm. Every time we deploy a change into that environment, doesn't matter how big the change is, we've got a ground truth set of about 1,000 questions that we look at, you know, the deltas to change in question and answer quality on that 1,000 set. We categorize it by 10 different categories, and we look at the trend in completeness and accuracy of those answers. We also have taken a lot of steps to install guardrails into what it's allowed to say and what it's not allowed to say. So an example, one of the things we don't want to do is give financial advice with these applications. Right. And so we specifically prompt, fine tune to not even touch those topics. And so that's something that we're very cognizant of. We still disclose, like, this is, if you were to plop if an advisor were to use this tool and put in their social security information for a client, social security number in there, mm-hmm. that would obviously be a problem. And we're looking at ways to make that a lot more robust to kind of user errors, so to speak. But for the data sets we control and that we can provision to the advisors through that application, I think we're doing a pretty good job of measuring quality of the answers. The other area, just to touch on, because it's a little bit different where I feel like we were maybe more aggressive in pushing, is when we give, and I kind of use this context for our data analysts, when they're reading, a prospectus filing for a Fidelity fund in the United Kingdom, for example, we're not requiring that kind of the generative AI algorithm to have a certain quality threshold before we deliver the inferences to the analyst. We kind of just want to take the approach of saturation, even if there is, it's only 60% accurate, 70% accurate. We'd rather deliver that so we can learn, all right, what did it get wrong when the analyst goes mm-hmm. in and reviews it? Kind of check, check, check. We got those right. No, those weren't right. And that's how we're going to, through that feedback loop, get better and keep tuning these models. So that's been a change in our approach, where before we had kind of the mindset of, hey, we want to try to come in here and replace what our people do with AI. We're increasingly taking the view, no, this is just an enabler technology. Let's give them insights, our analyst team's insights, and have them ultimately own the quality and the control there before that gets to our customers. So that's been a philosophical shift that's important for us and helping us unlock the potential much faster for these technologies.
Yeah, that really is impressive. And it sounds like one of the things that you're doing well is not just using AI to try to replace people, but to use AI to complement and make the people more effective. And that's been true. I mean, AI is really just, at the end of the day, another information technology tool like spreadsheets or communication or networking. And that sounds like a really good approach for, you know, that you've been able to put together with AI as a complement and an enhancer. Before we wrap up, I guess I'd ask you quickly, you know, it sounds like you're really deep into kind of the cutting edge of AI capabilities and data analytics capabilities in general and data growth and all these issues. Do you have any quick predictions, you know, like one quick prediction of what you think will happen in this domain of data analytics and financial analysis?
Oh, man. It'll probably continue to be extremely dynamic. I'd say that the areas, so I'll say one thing. I think we're going to quickly move, especially for large enterprises, we're going to quickly move away from being enamored with the flashiest technologies and mm-hmm. move back towards an era of just working with really trusted partners and vendors with a particular emphasis on quality and governance. And the reason I say that is because there's like that old Spider-Man quote, like with great power comes great responsibility. And I feel like every firm now has been given so much power with these technologies, right? To create data, to understand data, to process it with greater speed and handle the complexity that we're all seeing. And I just feel like I think there's going to be a push to, all right, who are the firms we can actually trust to partner with our brand? And we're going to give turn these over, whether it's a vendor or partner relationship or what have you. I think that's going to become a key differentiator. And then I guess, you know, there's going to be some subset of technologies, I think, that just become a lot more important. Like, for example, I'll mention one category specifically, the data observability category that's been kind of stood up here in the last 3-4 years, firms like Big Eye or Monte Carlo that are operating in that space in particular. I think that's just going to be exploding in importance because businesses like ours, we're going to need to understand with great transparency our data supply chains. Where does it come in? You know, where is it transformed? Is it trusted? And we're going to need to be tuning those data supply chains with increasing frequency and granularity. So I think that category and others like it are going to be increasing in importance. So those are a couple things I might say.
That's fantastic. And it's been really great, you know, getting a little peek into all the insights that you guys are working through and bringing to the world. You know, it's a lot of cutting edge stuff, which is always super interesting to kind of hear about. So Lee, thanks so much for joining us today. And thanks everybody for listening in. I you know, this was a really interesting set of insights to get about what's really going on with data in the world today. And it's transformational. You can always find out more about Ocient at Ocient.com. And thanks everybody for joining.